Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an assessment of the Republican presidential candidate's debate on national security, billed as the Commander-in-Chief debate. David Rothkopf, the author of Running the World, The Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power, joins us. We will discuss the candidate's positions and qualifications as possible leaders of the free world. Then, for another opinion on the suitability of the Republican presidential candidates to be stewards of our national security, we're joined by Roger Morris, who served on the National Security Councils under Presidents Johnson and Nixon until resigning over the bombing of Cambodia. He is the author of Between the Graves, a new book about the history of U.S.-Afghan relations, and is at work on a comparative Cold War history of the inner politics of the U.S. and Soviet Russia. Then finally, in light of the prolonged cover-up at Penn State University to protect the storied football program, we will discuss the decline of public morality and ethical values in America and at universities, and the relationship of big money, big sports, and corporate power to higher education. Joining us is Henry Giroux, the author of Youth in a Suspect Society, Democracy or Disposability, and The University in Chains, Confronting the Military-Industrial Academic Complex. Henry Giroux previously held an endowed chair at Penn State University. Joining us now is David Rothkopf, who is president and CEO of Garton Rothkopf and a visiting scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He writes for Foreign Policy and is internationally acclaimed author of Superclass, the Global Power Elite and the World They Are Making, and Running the World, the Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power. He was formerly chief executive of Intellibridge Corporation, managing director of Kissinger Associates, and U.S. Deputy Undersecretary of Commerce for International Trade Policy. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Rothkopf.
Hi, pleasure to be here.
And there does seem to be, if you watch the Republican presidential candidates debate, and if you follow the president, who was, of course, vilified in a sort of endless and rather gratuitous way, but I guess that's politics. But there does seem to be an enormous disconnect between what the Secretary of State is saying, Hillary Clinton, that our foreign policy is pivoting towards Asia and away from Europe, and all of the China bashing that went on last night amongst the Republican candidates.
I think to begin with, you referred to in your introduction that this was called, the Commander-in-Chief debate. And I think it was a good debate for the Commander-in-Chief because he looked good by comparison to all of these people. That pivot that you speak of is a really important strategic move, perhaps the most important strategic move the United States has made since the end of the Cold War. I think more significant even than the one that we made after 9/11, because it really does orient us towards the big issues of the remainder of this century. There was a lot of China bashing. Some of the most acrimonious came from Mitt Romney, who is normally quite moderate. And it's clear that he is staking out that issue as one potential vulnerability that Obama has on foreign policy. But I think that the big overarching story of all of this is that it was interesting to hear these guys lay out their various and women lay out their various foreign policy views, because I don't think it's going to come up much during the campaign, because Obama has done something kind of remarkable, and he's taken foreign policy off the table. Normally, Republicans run at Democrats and say they're not strong enough on security, but with the bin Laden and al-Awlaki and Gaddafi situations, with him meeting his promise on Iraq and meeting his promise on Afghanistan after doubling down, there's really no room to go after him. And so a lot of the views you heard last night, you may not hear again, simply because none of these guys are going to want to bring them up.
Well, apparently, though, according to the pundits, David Rothkopf, President Obama's success in foreign policy will not translate at the polls.
Well, first of all, we know about the pundits because, 4 years ago at this time, they were telling us about President Hillary Clinton. Pundits tend to, revert to conventional wisdom or the kind of story of the moment and let that color their views. I think Obama, first of all, rates very high in the polls right now in foreign policy, 60% plus. So that resonates because it's a positive for him. And secondly, and I think more importantly and neglected by the pundits, is the fact that usually Democratic candidates are pounded on national security issues by Republicans, and he has taken the issue off the table. So even if he doesn't get points for what he's doing, he has eliminated an area of potential attack simply because I don't think he's vulnerable there.
Well, a couple of the candidates whose China bashing was particularly, I think, somewhat absurd, Rick Perry said the communist Chinese government will end up on the ash heap of history if they do not change their virtues. Virtues was a strange word, I thought, in that context. And the other person who was Michelle Bachmann, who said, if you look at China, they don't have food stamps or aid to families with dependent children. That was particularly strange coming from somebody that's anti-abortion activist, raised 23 foster children. Here she is praising the world's capital of forced abortions.
Strange is one of the words. There were a lot of strange things that came up last night. The little cheering section for torture as an appropriate choice for the United States was a little bit strange. Rick Perry's notion that somehow we should zero out all foreign policy and, you know, reassess it every year based on, you know, a set of, you know, criteria of, you know, sort of what they're going to do for us is wholly impractical. Thus, doesn't understand how these things work, and so forth. So that, you know, there's a lot of silliness there last night. But you're absolutely right; these people were silly on China. Having said that, these people aren't going to be president. They're not going to influence these issues. It really doesn't matter. The only person who one has to listen to kind of closely on this is Romney, because I think it's very unlikely anybody's going to challenge him. And, you know, he did a fairly, you know, competent job on this. Not that I agree with everything he said.
Sure. Again, I'm speaking with David Rothkopf, who's president and CEO of Garden Rothkopf. He has written Running the World, The Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power and Superclass, the Global Power Elite and the World They Are Making. We're talking about the Republican candidates, presidential candidates, a debate on national security. There's a couple of people on that stage, frankly. I'm not sure why they're there. Why is Rick Santorum there? Do you know?
Well, because he's running, and because the way our system works, and if you're running and you've raised a certain amount of money, or you get a certain number of signatures in a certain number of states, or whatever the criteria is for these debates, you're allowed into the debate. He's a former senator. He speaks to, you know, some of the fringier groups on the right. To be kind of quite honest, although almost nothing he says is, do I agree with. Santorum is a lot more credible on these issues than, say, Herman Cain, whose, silence, mumbling, and fumbling last night was practically embarrassing.
Well, his assessment of the Arab Spring was bizarre, that he's basically saying, bring back Mubarak.
It was bizarre. It was bizarre. His candidacy is bizarre. The fact that he is cheered on by the left and right is more a manifestation of, public anger and alienation and who looks the least like a politician here than it is any appreciation for any skills or experience that he's got.
So when you say that Romney is the only credible candidate, David Rothkopf, Romney, of course, as I say, he was more than anybody else gratuitously going after Obama at every opportunity, whether it made sense, whether it was in any context or not. He also, though, did offer up cutting the NEA, the National Endowment of the Humanities, the National Endowment of the Arts, all public broadcasting funding. Of course, we're talking about a huge 1% of the U.S. budget. I mean, in terms of the foreign aid attacks from Perry, and it's probably, 0.2% or something ridiculous that Romney's going to save. I mean, what was your sense of the reality checking that came from the moderators? They seemed more intent on trying to get these people to make fools of themselves rather than to nail them on their absurdities.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think they did a mediocre job. And when I say Romney is the most credible, it's just, if you sort of look at who's likely to win where and who's got the money and, who isn't, such a fringe candidate that they're not going to have any legs, he seems most likely. To be perfectly honest, I think the candidate who ended up sounding the best, who's most equipped to be the commander-in-chief, was probably Huntsman. Now, having said that, Romney thinks he's running against the president because, you know, and has been briefed to do that. And he ultimately, you know, the thing that will unify a Republican Party that's kind of tepid about him to him is the perception that he is the guy who can do the best in beating Obama. And so pitting himself against Obama, contrasting himself as a guy who understands the world is a little bit tougher on the key issues that Republicans resonate to. That's political positioning. To be quite honest, I think, you know, you get Romney into office and he's likely to be more of a sort of traditional moderate Republican and follow kind of a mainstream American foreign policy. On the issue of funding, though, I mean, you know, the one big issue that might actually arise during the campaign associated with national security is, what do you do about the defense budget? Because you can't actually balance the U.S. budget without doing three things. You got to raise revenues, which these guys don't want to do. You've got to deal with entitlements, which they want to do to excess. And then above and beyond that, what you've got to do is you're going to have to cut the defense budget somehow. And I think, you know, these guys are going to, you know, Obama is going to say some things that sound a little reasonable on this, and they will go after him on that.
So what's the sense, though, that you have, David Rothkopf, amongst Republicans about the field? It's easy for Democrats and liberals to make fun of them because they do seem so manifestly inadequate. But I noticed, for example, on the McLaughlin report, Pat Buchanan basically dismissing them, the Republican candidates, as a joke.
Well, you know, I think that's a great American tradition. Every year, as far back as I can remember, a bunch of candidates roll out. For the most part, they tend to be, you know, denigrated as, you know, the seven dwarfs or, you know, can't we do any better than this or whatever. On foreign policy, this is even more pronounced because, look, you know, five out of the last six presidents of the United States have been elected with virtually no foreign policy experience. So, you know, this that, you know, they tend to look even worse by this criteria. At the end of the day, you get a candidate. That candidate's got some, you know, pluses. You know, I mean, Romney was a governor. He ran the Olympics. He was a successful businessman. You can sort of figure out what that narrative is going to be. And he's going to sell himself as the anti-Obama. He's going to count on the fact that negative opinion about Obama will carry him to victory. You know, and it's so close out there right now that bad news 3 weeks before the election about the economy or, you know, a terrorist incident or something like that that cuts against the president could dip the scales and Romney could certainly win.
Well, there's something that might happen in the real world. It would be, I think, something to do with Iran. Obviously, things are getting hotter since the IAEA report. They were asked about that. Romney, of course, being quite jumping on that question. He's basically saying, Romney's saying that if you re-elect Barack Obama, Iran will have a nuclear weapon. If you elect Mitt Romney, Iran will not have a nuclear weapon. What is he talking about? Again, the follow-up wasn't adequate, but everybody seems to agree that a military action against Iran would be an absolute catastrophe, but he sounds like he's pretty bent on it, Romney.
Well, he wasn't specific enough to make you think that he was actually bent on it. I think he was just simply, you know, making one of those statements, which is, you know, probably true. You know, it's not that if you elect Obama, Iran's going to end up with the bomb. Iran's probably going to end up with the bomb because the ways to keep Iran from having the bomb are so odious or difficult that we will hesitate to do any of them until the story breaks and they've tested a nuclear weapon, as was the case with Pakistan, as has been the case with countries like North Korea and so forth. And so, you know, my sense is, you know, somebody briefed him to say that. If you said, would you take, you know, action against Iran tomorrow, he would immediately hem and haw and say, well, we have to try this and that, and we've got to make sure, you know, allies are lined up this way. I don't think there is a clear, easy answer on Iran. I do know this, though. As bad as it would be to undertake a massive military strike against Iran. If you take the option of having military strikes of some sort off the table, you definitely will end up with a nuclear Iran, because you will have no leverage when you're negotiating.
Well, just in closing, though, you think that in the interim there's not going to be that the wild card that you talked about. I mean, that the U.S. will be able to restrain the Israelis, for example.
Well, I don't know if the U.S. is talking about failing to restrain the Israelis. I mean, you know, the United States may, you know, look the other way if things get, you know, significantly worse, as may a number of countries in the Gulf. I think interesting sort of, you know, news this week was that the United States has said, in response to the IAEA report, they've gone around to countries like the United Arab Emirates and said, why don't you have some of these wonderful bunker buster bombs, you know, and sort of strengthening the militaries around Iran as part of the way of putting up pressure. That seems to me to be a sort of a fairly canny way of turning up the heat on the Iranians without getting into something that's over the top, dangerous, going to suck us into another war.
And $10 a gallon gasoline.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's another possibility. But I do think you're right about one thing. The odds are better than 20% that at some point in the next 2 years, and possibly before the election, you will get the Iranians announcing a breakthrough on this. And were that to happen before the election, that would be jumped on by whoever the Republican candidate is and used as a cudgel against the president.
Well, I thank you for joining us, David Rothkopf.
My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with David Rothkopf, who is the president and CEO of Garton Rothkopf and a visiting scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He writes for Foreign Policy and is the internationally acclaimed author of Superclass, The Global Power Elite and the World They Are Making and Running the World, the inside story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power. He was formerly chief executive of IntelliBridge Corporation, managing director of Kissinger & Associates, and U.S. Deputy Undersecretary of Commerce for International Trade Policy. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back with another opinion of the Republican commander-in-chief debate.
Always walking you down memory lane. These things I say, I seem to have